Welcome to the Negotiations Ninja podcast, where we develop and deliver the most engaging negotiation content and training in the world. We host negotiation experts, business people, and entrepreneurs, and discuss what works, what doesn't work, and how we can improve our negotiation skills. What's going on, Negotiations Ninja listeners? You've got Mark here from the Negotiations Ninja podcast. This week, my amazing and incredible guest is Susan Walsh. She's the classification guru, and you could sort of count on one hand the people that you should go to when it comes to the classification and organization and cleansing of data with respect to procurement. By the way, Susan is one of those people that you would count. And this week, we talk all about the role of data in negotiations, especially with respect to procurement. Highly recommend that you check out her stuff online. She's an amazing social media presence. And she talks about the things that people don't want to talk about. And she solves all of those problems. And I love the way that she approaches it. Enjoy this incredible interview with Susan Walsh. Susan, we're here. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm so excited to have you on, finally.
This is so exciting. I feel like I know you so well, even though we've spoke on the phone maybe once or twice, but yeah.
Seeing your content, I always smile whenever I see your content online.
Likewise, I love your rants. You know, I'm like, yes, I'm there with you.
Yeah, the rants get positive and some negative responses, if I'm honest.
You know, you're not doing it right if you're not offending someone.
Exactly. There's going to be some people you're going to offend along the way. For the people who don't know about who you are and what you do, educate them for a second as to sort of the data guru that is Susan.
Yeah, so I am the classification guru, fixer of dirty data. But it's mainly dirty procurement spend data. So I fell into this world by accident and then realized that all these companies were spending loads of money on sexy dashboards, but the real problem was the data coming in that had to be cleaned before they went into the dashboards. And I just thought, why is nobody just offering this as a service? You know, so not one single contact in the procurement or data world. And I just went out and was like, I'm here to classify your data. And first it was tough because people didn't look for me because they didn't know I existed and there's not really anything else out there similar. So I had to really kind of make myself very present and memorable so that when they did have a data problem, they would know who to come to. And thankfully, as a kind of side effect of that, the data world has welcomed me with open arms as well, which has been really cool. And basically what I do is I take spend data, I normalize it. So all your suppliers like your IBM, i.b.m, IBM Inc.'s, they all become IBM and then they get classified properly. So, you know, if you're buying servers from IBM, they'll be classified as servers. If you buy an IT services, it'll be IT services. And then when you roll that all up, suddenly you have a true picture of actually how much you're spending with a supplier on what. So, and sometimes that can be a real surprise for people.
And a scary surprise as well.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I had one client.
Oh, we spend a load of money with this company.
Yeah. I did some work for a client and it was the worst of worst data. It was supplier name only, 90 different countries, almost as many different languages. But at the end of that, the client then realized they had about 1,000 consultants globally on their books. And they're like, we need to get that number down. We should not have that many. So it's a job that not a lot of people enjoy doing. There are obviously better data files than others, but it's something that I really enjoy doing. And I think, yeah, you have to do this kind of job.
Yeah. Well, I find that the successful entrepreneurs are the ones that do the jobs that no one else wants to do.
Yeah.
And you're one of those people that I see, right? Because when people are like, hey, we're going to classify all of this data, we're going to clean it up, we're going to make it look good. People in the procurement department are just like, good God, how much work is this going to be, right? They start thinking about like, because most people in procurement, I feel like have at least tried to attempt this before. The amount of hours that get put into doing something like this is just so mind-numbingly daunting so that when they look at it, they're like, okay, no, we actually have to find someone to do this because we can't.
Yeah, and it can take years because they've got the day job on top. And it's the thing that always gets put to the bottom of the list because it's the thing they don't want to do.
And they have to keep doing it.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it all gets dirty again.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's data is ever changing. So, you know, there's cut and paste errors, there's accidental deletions, there's somebody decides that they don't think it should be classified as that because they know better. But actually, that might have been decided and agreed that department-wide, that that is what that thing is going to be classified as. Yeah, it can get a bit crazy and out of control again in a very short space of time if you don't keep on top of it.
Yeah. One of the things that I think a lot of people, especially in the procurement world, fail to recognize is that the quality of your data, to a large extent, determines the quality of your negotiation that you're going to be going into.
Yeah, totally.
And the biggest problem that I see is that they don't put the work in up front to clean the data, cleanse it, classify it properly so that they actually know what's going on. What do you see as some of the biggest problems in data and procurement?
So something that I've been hearing quite a lot of recently is that if the business doesn't already have classified data, they're relying on figures from their supplier on how much they've been spending with them.
Classic.
And guess what? Those numbers don't necessarily match up when I classify the data. And, you know, there could be a number of different things like discounts haven't been added or, you know, whatever. But, you know, that is dangerous. Could they be hiding something?
People would be hiding things
from you
in data?
I know, can you believe it? I know.
Outrageous. I would never believe that.
Yeah, or have they missed, you know, a massive chunk of your spend off because it's sitting in another department? It's a great example from the last couple of weeks. Client now can see how much they're spending on car leases for the first time. Under GL codes, there's about four different GL codes ranging from staff benefits to office supplies to lots of other things. So how can you negotiate anything if you don't have a true number? You're negotiating.
Well, I mean, as frightening, as shocking as it might sound, there I've worked with many procurement teams that have no idea how much money they're spending.
Yeah.
Like actually no idea. Yeah. They have a rough estimation because they can pull up GLs. Okay, we think we're spending this, but many of them very large have no idea where they're spending their money and how they're spending their money. And more importantly, even if you could classify it, even if they could do that, they can't get into the weeds on deep analytics to be able to say, okay, as a portion within this supplier, what are we spending money on, right? How much is going to this service? How much is going to that service? And then within each of those services, what does that actually mean?
Yeah,
and that is shocking. It's shocking.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm not shocked. It's I should be, but I'm not.
It's your job not to be shocked.
It's terrifying that that's how businesses are being run.
Yes.
But the other thing is, I work with a lot of global companies. So you imagine just not knowing what you're doing within your own country and then multiplying that by all the countries that you work in. And then finding out that you're paying different prices for the same thing in different countries.
From the same company.
Supplier, yeah. Yeah. Crazy. And or even little things like, you know, how many invoices per supplier are you getting a month? You know, are they sending you 100 invoices a month? Do you know the cost of processing an invoice?
Yeah.
You know, why can't they put those 100 items on one invoice? Data can tell you so much. And it can tell you like fun stuff too. Like I can tell the kind of culture of a company from their data. So
interesting. Tell me more about that.
Yeah, yeah. So you see it in like P card or expenses spend, you know, like Fruity Fridays is a good one, or Thirsty Thursdays, that was my favorite. Or Takeout Tuesdays. You know, they obviously try to give some appreciation to their staff. Well, little things like that. And then also, you know, the stretching the expenses thing like a little bit far, like dry cleaning at the hotel for an overnight stay and stuff like that, you know.
I was fortunate enough to be involved in a P-card spend project at some point, and we discovered that people were buying lingerie on P-card.
Strippers, nightclubs,
Nightclubs, like all sorts of things on P-cards where you're like, now, how do you address that situation?
Yeah. Right? Yeah. But even actually worse than that, I see a lot of software going through credit cards. Big software spend. So how much software are you missing out on because it's going on a card, you know? And it's like the Zooms, the LinkedIn, the HubSpots, you know, all that stuff. And sometimes it's even like, you know, all the Adobe stuff, all on credit cards when you could be getting a much better deal.
And they may actually even have, this was an issue at one of the companies that I was at some point in time. I'm trying to be as vague as I can about that. where there was corporate licenses, right?
Yeah.
And there was enough corporate licenses for everyone, right? They had empty seats, but people had gone out and purchased on their own, and then trying to consolidate those back in is the most painful process. But there's no way to know unless you actually go through the analysis, which is what you do best.
Yeah. And you have to pull out like the company names as well to become the supplier name, because yeah, it's just all sitting under American Express or whoever.
You know? And so going through the actual line items of the purchase, is that what you have to do?
Yeah. You can strip out the names. That's not too bad. But yeah, classifying it is literally, you know, keyword searches. And you have to be so careful because there are so many descriptions like taxi from the hotel to the restaurant or hotel cab to restaurant. And it's, you got to check these things because it might seem a bit kind of OCD to go into the detail of a cab, but all those little transactions add up to thousands of transactions. Uh-huh. And across a whole range of products, that can be a fair chunk of money that you could save or at least be monitoring.
Hey, listeners, I want to tell you about another company that I run called Content Callout. It is a thought leadership brand marketing company. Now, what does that mean? It means that we take you as an executive or entrepreneur, a leader of a small or medium-sized business, and we turn you into a thought leader online. We take your personal brand and we amp it up to 11. So that you can lead with confidence, knowing that people will recognize you, recognize your brand, and recognize your business because of the thought leadership approach that you've taken on social media through content creation and content distribution, as well as engaging with all of your following online. How do you get involved in this? Easy. Just go to contentcallout.com/get-started, and you will see there three different options that will allow you to take your thought leadership brand for yourself and for your business to the next level. We are super excited to talk to you about this. We've seen some massive growth with the businesses that we've been working with. Very, very exciting time for us. Look at that. We appreciate it. Now back to your show. When you think about negotiation and some of the key data points that should exist, or you should have actually planned or have access to prior to going into the negotiation, for a procurement person, what are some of the key things that they absolutely have to know when, for example, buying a service?
I mean, if they have to know just one thing, it should be exactly how much they're already spending either with that supplier or within their competitor suppliers within that industry. Because if you don't know that, how can they give you a good quote or the right quote based on what the numbers you're telling them? Or how can you negotiate a better rate if you are underselling yourself?
But you have no idea of the leverage that you would have in that negotiation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Globally as well. You know, you could say, well, actually, you know, we're doing business with you in 20 countries. So let's talk global here. Let's think a bit bigger.
Yeah, exactly. So understanding the spend that you have with that specific vendor, and then the spend that you may have with that vendor's competitors that you could potentially consolidate, or that you've got a leverage-based situation where you can actually use one versus the other, right? And you don't have to make that decision. But many organizations go and think that they only actually are using one. There have been cases in the past where I think some people have gone in thinking that they only do business with one consultant, for example, or do the vast majority of their business with one consultant, when they find out that they actually got more spend that's disparate amongst like 30 other consultants that they should actually be consolidating. And they all offer the same consulting service, right? So it's not actually like different or anything like that. It's just because certain organizations or departments within those companies all over the world have their preference.
Yeah. And you have to be careful because sometimes it's just a person's name. It's not necessarily a business name.
Interesting.
So it's not necessarily obvious. I mean, you see a person's name in a really high spend and you know straight away that it's like, it's either a consultancy or some kind of payoff, basically.
No, payoffs don't happen. They don't happen.
No, of course not. because there's, yeah, some of the numbers are just, you know, it has to be a consultant. And, you know,
there have been situations that you've gotten into where you very clearly detected some sort of fraud or bad stuff happening where you're like, I need to tell someone about this.
There's definitely like areas where you're like, that looks a bit high. That doesn't look quite right. And the flip side is the client is telling me that they should have higher numbers and it's lower. I'm like, well, this is what the data says. You know, I've been back to basics and checked what you've given me. So they're getting potentially different information from, say, finance.
Interesting.
You know, it's finance telling them what they should have. And it's like maybe five times higher than what the actual spend is. So they've been going along thinking
about finance is telling them that it should be five times higher than what the actual spend is.
Yeah.
Where are they getting that information?
Well, that's what they need to go and investigate. But this is what I love about my job. It's like detective work. You know, you pick out all these little things that just don't quite add up.
Interesting.
Or, you know, sometimes hotels, you know, like loads of spend in hotels. So, you know, it can't be accommodation. So it must be conferences or events, venue hire. But yeah, you know, you've got like a $5,000 taxi, then you know there's something going wrong.
Now that, you know, people are doing less travel, obviously, with everything that we're dealing with, there's less hotel stays, there's less airfare, all that other kind of stuff. Has that spend disappeared or have you seen it move?
Oh, man. Office furniture, that's appeared a lot. And PPE, suddenly, you know, I knew what PPE was before because I've been classifying it for years. But suddenly it's like in credit cards and, you know, here, there and everywhere. And it just never was before. But lots of office furniture now.
Office furniture because people are working from home?
Yeah. So they need a better setup. So, and again, you know, that's just the kind of rogue spending. Everyone's off doing their own thing. And when you add that up at the end, you probably could have had a better deal on furniture if you...
Interesting. And so I wonder, like, leaders are probably telling their employees, like, you know, here's the card, buy whatever you need to work from home.
Yeah.
Instead of approaching it strategically, being like, here's the vendor, here's the contract, you know, here's the list that you get to buy from, go buy from that list.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
So, yeah. I mean, I'm sure some of these desks, inverted commas, are very nice coffee tables. I mean, I'm sure there must be some of that going on.
Yeah, exactly. When you're thinking of all these sort of data points that go into the negotiation, one of the things you said was, okay, you got to know how much you're spending, what you're spending it on, and potentially the competitors that you're spending it with. Do you, for most of the companies that you're working with, is that sort of where the spend level stops? Is that top tier spend level of like, okay, at least we know how much money we spend? Of the percentage of companies that you work with, how many of them actually know within that supplier what they're spending their money on?
Actually, so most of my clients that come to me haven't got classified data already. So they have no visibility. Of the ones that have had classified data, it has been worse than not having classified data because it's been so misleading. You know, you can make worse decisions with wrong data than you can with no data.
So it's been misclassified.
Oh, massively. Yeah, or just massive gaps. Or you can tell where they've had someone in maybe and they've run some kind of automation program and it's just bulk classified a whole load of stuff as like building services when it's definitely not building services. Well, I can tell from data when it's been done by a person or a machine.
And when that stuff gets misclassified, then people are making decisions on that misclassified data and the quality of the decision goes down.
Yeah. Right? And, you know, it's not always an overtly obvious mistake. So it could be something kind of subtle.
Like what? Give me a for instance.
So could be you've classified some stuff as professional services consulting, but it's IT services or something like that, you know, kind of looks right. So nobody really bats an eyelid at it. You know, you wouldn't necessarily look the other way if IBM had some consultancy in there. But if that's not what you're paying for, then how can you negotiate on the services? Or how do you even know what you're paying really for that? Or say there's a contract with IBM and there you get X amount of service time a year or something. You know, are you even measuring that to make sure that you're using it all? Or have you gone over or any, you know, all those different things? It can tell you so much.
This whole idea is so mind-blowing to me because I find that when we're dealing with data and decision quality and the quality of data leading to the quality of decisions, you think about the poor decisions that have been made. And they probably were they had the right decision-making mindset, right? When they went into it, they're like, okay, this is the right decision based on the data, but the data was wrong, which led to the bad decision. So you can't even blame the people for it because they made the right decision based on the information that they had, right?
Yeah.
And so when you're doing this, how do you convince people that this is a worthwhile endeavor? Do you just say, here's how much money you could have saved had you used me before? Like, how does that conversation go?
You know, I am really lucky that I have now positioned myself that people know to come to me when they have a problem. So I don't have to outbound sell. They just normally come to me via LinkedIn and say, here's my problem. Can you help? How much is it going to cost? And then either we go ahead or we don't. So for them, they're already at the point of crisis where they just need some help. They know they can't do it themselves. So
you're like the special ops data team, essentially.
Yeah, come in
to like solve the problem.
Yeah, definitely. But there's so many kind of intangible benefits of having someone like myself come in because, you know, I've been doing this for 10 years. So I can see, I've worked across all the industries. So, you know, when you work in an organization, you have a very narrow view of your organization. Whereas I've seen data in all businesses and there's certain things that are the same in every one. And, you know, there's certain things that should be in taxonomies that if you work in one company, you might not even think about putting in. You know, things that gets left off the list are things like charitable donations and license fees and taxes. People forget to add those in. And then they end up in some random bucket that's, well, I hope nobody's using miscellaneous as a category. That's for sure.
Or there's just a bunch of extra things they classify as quote unquote tail spend.
Where you're just like,
is this actually tail spend or should have this been classified in something else?
Well, quite often. So there's a couple of things around that. If you don't normalize your supplier, some of your like big spend could be sitting in what you might think is tail, but it's actually, you know, strategic spend. And it's maybe like, I don't know, 50K here or there on a couple of things that should be going in a bigger bucket. The other thing is a lot of companies, they'll do like the top 95% value of your data. They won't, you know, the last 5% could be like hundreds of thousands of rows and not worth their time to do.
Right.
Whereas I'm like, no, I'm coming in. And when you get a file classified, you get it 100% classified. There will be no tail spend, unclassified or miscellaneous other classifications. It will be properly classified because say you are taking a cut at the end of a financial year. So it's the month, last month of the financial year. And there's something sitting in tail spend that's maybe like 10K's worth of spend because it was like a scoping project. And then the next year, that same supplier is going to do like 500K's worth of business with you. But you're not going to look at classifying that data again for a while. You're probably not going to look at it till the next quarter or something. So you're missing all that information out. You might not even realize that that's happening. And then you go and try and find another supplier or your colleague does because, you know, you haven't talked to each other. And there's a whole load of things that can, reasons why you should still classify your tail spend. You know, it's all those little, like, you know, small change down the back of the sofa. Imagine all the sofas in the world. If you added all that small change together, that would be a big amount. And that's
well, and especially like during a time where people are unsure about finances and stuff like that, right? Like we've entered into this phase during a global pandemic where many companies have been hit financially by being unable to sell in the same way that they're able to sell in the past. So budgets have become tighter, right? And so they're looking for every opportunity they can to find money where they have previously not been able to find it. And what I'm hearing you say is, unless you go through that classification process, you're not going to be able to find the money properly.
And yeah, it's going to take some time. It's going to be the worst of worst jobs, but it's going to be really valuable.
But that's why we have you.
Yeah, exactly.
We don't have to do that job.
Yeah, I mean, my team, we're happy to do it. Yeah. But it's like everybody is scrutinizing their spend now.
Yeah.
And it's actually only getting more and more popular, I would say. You know, I am getting more and more inquiries because they're looking at for opportunities where they didn't need to worry before because the business was doing really well. So they didn't need to look at anything. And now, you know, especially like the travel industry, they were fine. You know, they didn't have to worry about looking at the little bits and bobs, but suddenly, you know, 12 months without many passengers and people traveling, and every single penny needs to be accounted for.
So there's people that are listening to this right now, I'm sure, that are going to say something like, well, I mean, that's why we're getting a spend analytics platform, right?
Yeah.
We know we have a problem. That's why we're getting a spend analytics platform. The platform will solve that, right? It's going to be fine. What do you say to those people?
Okay, let's go back to the consultant that's just a name in the data. How is the platform going to know that? It's not a big company. It's not going to be on someone's master list, probably. They could maybe guess that it's consultancy, or there's a place for it, but really you need to do that first round with either your team or someone who knows what they're doing, so that when you do your refreshes, it knows to learn from the right data, you know, because the big companies will be recognized. And if you look at your top 80% spend, it will look pretty spot on. But if you start digging into that bottom 20%, you'll soon start to see a lot of stuff that's not quite right. And it only takes a quick pivot to do that.
Do you have to then go in, like go right down to root cause on vendor setup and stuff like that in many cases?
No, I don't really get involved in all that. I get a spreadsheet, I populate it, and then I send it back, and then it goes into systems, or it actually quite often it doesn't go into systems. It stays within procurement, because procurement has a very different lens to finance or any other department within the business. So
GLs and spend may not necessarily match up.
Yeah. They'll never match up. Yeah. And GLs for procurement are just, don't even bother. It's not good. Like I said, you know, like that was like four GLs for one thing. And it's, you know, it's subjective as well, depending on who's put it in. You know, it's their opinion of what it should be.
Yeah, exactly.
So if you've got drop downs, that's even worse, because they tend to just go for the first thing on the drop down.
That's right. Susan, the main takeaway that I'm getting from this is you got to know where you're spending your money. You got to know what you're spending your money on in order to be effective in procurement and in negotiations. And I know that sounds like an obvious thing to say, but so many people who might be listening to this right now probably have no idea where they're spending their money. And even if they think they know, they still probably don't know. So if people want to reach out to you and they want to say, hey, I've got a data problem. I know I've got a data problem. This is like a come to Jesus moment, right? We're going to an AA meeting and we stand up and we say, hi, my name is Mark and I have a data problem. What do they do? How do they reach out to you?
So, well, LinkedIn is the best place to find me, or theclassificationguru.com. And, you know, I can offer either tips that they can do themselves in-house, or I can tell them how I can help them too. Most of the time, they don't have the time to do it themselves or the resources.
And you've got an army behind you, which is nice.
Well, my data elves, I'm calling them.
Data elves.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah. We're not an army, but that's the whole point. You know, we are a small, highly skilled team. You know, we are the kind of assassins.
Spec ops.
Yeah, exactly. You know, but we can achieve more between the four of us than you could with like 10 or 20 unskilled, inexperienced people. So
all I imagine is you getting like dressed up in a Navy SEALs outfit with your team, like rappelling into a corporation with like laptops and stuff like that. Well, listen, for the listeners, just so that you know, I'll link out to all of these resources and where to reach out to Susan and how to reach out to her in the show notes, as well as on the website. Susan, I appreciate what you do because it adds value to everything in negotiation and in procurement. Without people like you, we'd all be lost. So we do appreciate it. Listeners, please do me a favor. Go follow Susan on LinkedIn right now. Check out what she's doing there in terms of the content that she produces. It's fantastic. Thank you so much for being on today.
Thanks for having me.
Hey friends, thanks so much for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed it, please share it with friends and colleagues so that they can benefit from it as well. If you find Negotiations Ninja Podcast worthy, please go onto iTunes and give us a cool rating with a nice review. We certainly appreciate every single one that we get because it helps us to understand who is listening, how they're listening, and what it is they like. If there's something that you would like me to discuss around negotiation, influence, or persuasion, give me a shout. You know how to reach me on social media, or you can get me on my website, which is www.negotiations.ninja.